Welcome to Music Fishbowl.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Music Fishbowl, music chatter for all. It's Dan here and I am really looking forward to this episode for you. Now, this will be the last one before Christmas Day. It's possibly my favourite day of the year and it is fast approaching, so I'm really looking forward to that, and I've been listening to a lot of Christmas music lately. But let's go ahead with this episode. So we're doing a review of the year today. It's with my good friend and friend of the pod, Ryan. He's also known as Fumes. That's his artist name. He's a hip-hop R&B style artist. I have had the pleasure of having his album on early release this year, and I have been listening to it non-stop. It's fantastic. And also, he's been on the podcast before with all of his collaborators on the album, and we had them on. It's available to stream on Spotify. The link to his Spotify is in the podcast description, so you can go and listen there. There's also Instagram handles for him, so you can go and follow him too. What I would like to say is I've got a bit of housekeeping to do. Again, thank you as always to all of you who listen. Your time and everything is so valuable, as is the time of all my guests as well. Everything is so valuable to me, and it's helped the podcast go into a boom this year, getting much larger numbers across all the episodes, and it's just been really good. So I've been really, really happy with how things have gone. I would also like to say, if you want to be a guest on the podcast, just like Ryan or Fumes, as he's also known, you can drop me a DM on Instagram. That's at thisisvinyl.tap. Or send me an email to musicfishbowl123@gmail.com. You can find both of these in the podcast description if you missed them there. Just drop me a message and let me know. And yeah, if you want to come on and just talk about music like me and Ryan do today, or if you want to come on and promote your music as a musician or promote your vinyl account or anything like that, do feel free to. There's also a link in the description below to the podcast playlist, which is the songs recommendations playlist. Hasn't been updated so much this year, literally because I've done less episodes on my own, which is the goal. The goal is to do as little as I can on my own and have loads of guests for you, because they're always the best episodes. So, but at the same time, it is a worthwhile playlist, I think, with loads of great songs that I've recommended or had recommended to me on the podcast. They're all from the song recommendations section, because if you listen to this episode, there are obviously a lot of songs you can hear that are recommended, but obviously we don't put them in that playlist. I will also say as well, I do mention about a UK country playlist I've set up. I have put a link to that playlist in the description as well, so you can go and listen to that if you're interested in hearing what country music sounds like in the UK. Mostly spanning from 2018 through to around 2022, some 2023 is in there as well. But yeah, you can listen to that. It's got some really nice tracks as well. But yeah, no, other than that, there's not too much else to say other than really enjoy this episode. I'm so thankful to Ryan for coming on again. He's always a great podcast guest. He's a trusted friend of the pod, so we're always happy to have him on. And yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. So I'm going to let you hear what me and him were talking about now. Hello everyone, welcome back to Music Fishbowl, Music Chatter for All. I am here again with Fumes, or otherwise known as Ryan. Hello Fumes / Ryan.
Hello.
Hello. We're here today to do a review of the year, and it's been a big year for both of us, so I think we should probably start off with, let's talk about your year and what's happened to you, and yeah, let's go on that. All the music events of your artistry and everything.
It's been a crazy year, you know. It started off in, I think it was like April or something, and I was talking to Kalmar, as everyone knows, he's been a guest on here twice previously.
Yeah.
And was talking about like my old music and stuff like that I'd put out in the late 2000s, early 2010s. So Cal was talking about releasing it. So I said, well, you know, it's going to be hit and miss, because people that I produced with back in the day wanted to, obviously they own certain rights to certain tracks. So it was a case of Kalmar was like, well, why don't we just recreate it from the ground up? So it started off as a one-off track that we'd done. And before you know it, we had a full-blown album with many guests.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's a fantastic album. It's Phase 2 Remix, and it is available on Spotify, isn't it?
Yes, available on Spotify, it's available on CD, cassette now as well, which was a surprise.
Yeah.
That was actually just to bridge the gap for the vinyl, because the vinyl is coming as well. That is in production, full swing.
Excellent, cool. Yeah, and I know, obviously, you know, for independent artists, things aren't the best, but I'm sure people are patiently waiting. And if anything, it might be building up some anticipation, hopefully, because I know a lot of people will be wanting to get their hands on a vinyl, because you have had really good reception to the album, haven't you?
Yeah, do you know what? It's the vinyl that people want the most, to be honest. Like, people were buying the CDs just to support, you know, which I really appreciate. I appreciate everyone that's actually bought them. One person actually mentioned about cassette. I will give you a shout out here. That's Ted Bunny on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Another independent artist. So they were talking about cassettes because I believe they live overseas somewhere. I don't want to mention a country in case I get it wrong. But they were like, oh, cassettes and tape are really cheap to produce over here.
Hmm.
So I was like, okay. You know, I looked into it and it just spiraled from there. I was like, I put out a poll on Instagram, said, what formats do you want to see? You know, I listed obscurities like mini disc, wax cylinder, silly things like that.
Yeah.
Cassette come on top next to vinyl. So I was like, okay, it's got to be done.
Yeah, I think I found the popularity of cassettes. I think a lot of people just have them just because of the 80s, 90s nostalgia right now. Just the aesthetic, having a cassette on display in your bedroom kind of thing for teenagers and things like that. I think that's one reason why people love them. And the audio quality is way better than you remember it as well, which I think is quite interesting. I don't know if you find that.
Surprisingly, it is, because I've been getting out some of my old cassettes and I'm like, okay, this is better than what I remember, you know. It was all about turning on the noise reduction on the cassettes, and I've been, you know, I turned off the noise reduction system on my player and I was like, okay, this is actually much clearer than I actually imagined, like, from what I remember.
Yeah, and I think it sounds nice to us because it's an analog format, and especially with older music as well, analog recorded music that was done on tape. I think that always sounds really nice on a cassette. So especially when you're digging around your old cassettes, it's just a nice feel. I'll go over a bit of my year of review as well, because part of the success of it is to do with yourself, Humes, too. Obviously, the podcast has gone through a huge boom this year, which I'm really thankful for. Getting a lot more regular listens than I used to be. I used to some episodes that wouldn't do as well, and there's also do amazing. It's got a lot more regular now, which is amazing. And I put out some details on Spotify Wrapped, and I did either last episode or the episode before. Went through some of the stats on the podcast as well. So I won't go into them now, but obviously a big part of that, you know, when it did start picking up was as soon as you came on. So I have to say thank you for coming on for your earlier episode and this, should I call it, series season. So thank you so much for that, Ryan Fumes, for that, because that was that was the kickstarting moment. So I that's been my year in music, I guess, reviewed.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
No, it's not a problem. I owe you big time for that. But yeah, let's get into the year itself. So I think let's start by going through, let's start with one of the big events of the year, I'm going to say. Obviously for listeners, this is going to be a much more informal podcast, in terms of the fact that me and Ryan have spoken a few times on the pod now, and we're now used to speak to each other like this, and also it's just looking over what's happened. So I think we should start with the Beatles single, because I'm yet to give my thoughts, because I've had so many guests on the actual, I'm yet to give my thoughts on it on the podcast. So what were your thoughts on the single, Ryan?
Whoa, I was a little bit skeptical. I was like, how's it going to come out, you know? I've heard the bootlegs that have been circulating, you know, all on the internet for years now. So I was kind of expecting something very, very, very similar. Obviously, we got something that was partly similar. I don't want to spoil anything, you know, but it was similar to what I'd heard before, minus a certain bridge that they took out.
Yes.
Which, when on first listen, I remember listening and I was singing it in my head, the song. And then I was ready to crack into the bridge. I'm like, wait, well, that doesn't go there.
Yeah.
So it was just surreal. I was blown away, to be honest. I think it took me about two or three listens, and I was like, wow, this is just amazing.
Yeah, it took me a while, certainly, as well. It's a funny one, because I love what the AI does to clean up the track. I think it's really good. I think his soloed isolated vocal sounds incredible. I think it gets lost, a little bit of it does get lost in the mix, which is probably quite, you know, that's probably just due to technical limitations still, which, you know, but I can get over that. I really like McCartney's contribution on the record. I think everything McCartney does is really in service of the song. I think his vocals, his guitar playing, that's the slide solo, similar to what George would have done. I think that's great. I think the guitar that I believe George is playing sounds nice. I think it does some really nice rhythm licks on it. Yeah. Ringo's obviously Ringo, which is always good. but I will say, the biggest issue with this one, and it's one of the reasons why they shelved it and why Harrison wasn't so keen on it as well, is that it was, of the three songs they had for Anthology, because this was meant to come out in Anthology 3, yeah, it was the one song that wasn't complete. It was clearly a demo made to remember a melody. And that's partly why the bridge was taken out, because it was an incomplete vocal from Lennon, and there's bits in it where McCartney has to sing over Lennon with the backing vocals, because Lennon fluffed lines on it and things. So there are points with that. That's probably the biggest limitation the song has, I'd say.
It's done really well, actually, because
yeah,
when listening to it, it's hard
you
to
don't
notice,
hear
but
it. Yeah,
again, if you're sort of used to hearing the demo, so to speak, you'll know when it comes in, you know. And if you listen very closely, you can hear Lennon being sort of muted, and then McCartney and the harmony come in.
Yeah, exactly. And I also will say that, because we have to remember that Lennon was in his home recording this. He was doing it just to remember the song. He's not singing at his best. He's just doing it quietly, probably trying not to wake a sleeping child, things like that. So his vocal is not where we'd expect his vocal to be, which is probably why it does get slightly lost in the mix as well. So there is that. But for what it is, and for what they had to work with,
it's
happy.
Very well.
Yeah, I don't have too many issues with it. I will say I really appreciate the fact that a Beatles song has been released in my lifetime, because, you know, I was born not long after Real Love. So yeah, it didn't come out in my lifetime, and I wouldn't remember it anyway. So I do appreciate that. What did you think of the music video?
It's amazing what AI and tech can do nowadays, you know. For the effects and stuff, I was blown away, you know, because it genuinely looks like they're there in the studio with them.
Mm.
You know, the way they've incorporated that is absolutely amazing. As far as music videos go, it was a good surprise on first watch, you know.
Yeah.
After that, you kind of get used to it, you know, but
what I would call bonkers decisions are made. I'm not sure I'm totally against it at all, but I'm not sure I'm any way for it at the same time. It's a weird thing, isn't it, this video? Like,
yeah,
it's really weird, because you sit there thinking, this is the guy, directed by the guy who did Get Back, and the remastered footage of them in the 90s. Wow, whoa. Fantastic. That's amazing. But some of what they chose of Lennon and George Harrison was a weird choice, wasn't it?
Yeah. It mainly stems from the Hello Goodbye video, really.
Yeah.
And
it's the outtakes.
I think the portion of him impersonating the orchestra is from a clip from I Am the Walrus.
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
If not, what's the other one? Blue Jay Way, I believe.
Yeah,
as well.
I think it's all outtakes from Magical Mystery Tour era, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
And like, so it's all unseen stuff, but it's just a bit of a bizarre choice, because you would have thought the somber, sad song, and it's like, we're remembering Johnny. You would have thought they would have gone full remembrance style videos. I thought it was great the way they faded away at the end. We got some new footage of them playing Early Doors and things like that. Like, brilliant. And even the special effects at times, like the transitional effects at that end sequence when there's all the different, you know, movie footages and things of the Beatles going through, that's a little bit dodge, because it's just not up to the standard I expect. The effects of them in the studio, the greens, it's obvious that, you know, Ringo Starr's green screened and things like that. Like, it's obvious, but I appreciate it and I get it, and it's great green screen. It's not bad green screen at all. Like, that's fine. And I really loved when Paul and John almost sang to each other, looking at each other. That's great. But those, the choice, I mean, I get it as well, because the Beatles just liked having fun and having a laugh. So I get it. I get why they've done it that way. But it's just a bit bizarre with the song. Real Love, yeah. If it was Real Love, stick it on that. But it's just a bit weird, but I'll take it.
Now, see, if they had done what they did, but there's a scene with McCartney in the studio, and then obviously the younger McCartney and John Lennon just messing about in the studio either side of him. If they kept that in there as a sort of tribute, I think that would have been a better surprise, you know?
Yeah. To have all four of them doing it young and messing about would have been a bit more fitting, I think. But yeah, we got what we got.
It's a bit... I'm not too sure. There's no words, you know.
Yeah.
As I said, it was a good surprise when I first saw it.
Yes, exactly. And what I will say as well, something that I did really enjoy was the 12-minute documentary. That was really well done and really nice. The build-up to when you hear John's voice for the first time, considering the song wasn't out at the time when that was released. So this was like a build-up to it as well. Brilliant documentary, I'll take that.
I actually watched that on a specific TV show when they broadcasted it. So.
Oh, yeah.
I was blown away hearing it and
hearing
the demo stripped back, you know, and I was like, oh, wow,
this
is going to, you know, this is amazing. The tech that they've got now is just unreal.
Yeah, it is. And it opens up so many doors. And I think this opens another question for the 2023 review, is that we've seen an increase in just people, even in their bedrooms, using AI to imitate artists and things like that. It's at a point now when it's so smart. Well, it's not smart, because it's a misconception about AI. AI isn't smart. AI is as smart as it's not even as smart as the person who programs it. It'll only do what you tell it to do. It's just, it will learn to do. It's not going to learn itself. You know, it can't. It can't learn itself. But what it can do is it can take as much. It can learn to take information and imitate the information. That's all it can do. Like,
yeah.
So. When we talk about, you know, do you have any, I guess the question is, do you have any concerns with AI coming into the music industry or not? Because the Beatles have shown how it can be done really well and what it can be used for. But we do have these imitators now. Is that going to cause legal issues down the line, etc.? Or what? What's your thoughts?
I think the biggest issue that's going to be caused with this is, you know, you can put anyone in any song now. We're going to have something like S Club 7, Bring It All Back, being sung by Elvis, Mick Jagger.
We already have this, pretty much. Like, it's there.
Elton John. And some young lad in 60, 70 years' time is going to be on YouTube and be like, oh, I like this. You know, who's this group?
What is this? Well, there's a really... I'm going to say it's really good, because it is high quality, what the person's done. They've done the whole of the first... Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds album, all of it sung by Liam. And it's a really good AI that's done it. And occasionally it slips up and you can hear, but a lot of the time you would struggle if you weren't told. Like, it's, you can tell the songs, a lot of them were made for Liam. It's obvious when just listening to them normally, let alone when they got the AI. But there were ones like that. And then the same guy has also done an original song and changed his voice with Liam's, which really sounds like Liam, like, really. And that one kind of worries me, but not, because, like, I'm all for AI. I don't have a problem with it. It's the people who use it. And I'm not saying this guy's doing any wrong either, because he is saying, look, this is AI. I'm just using it to show the power of what can be done as like an experiment. That's fine. Yeah. And it's not making money or anything like that, I don't believe. So that's fine. But, you know, It's the people that use it, isn't it?
Well, I actually read up an article on what you was talking about, and it was someone said, "Oh, Noel's finally found a Liam that he could work with."
Yeah, but maybe that's the way to get them back together. I don't know. I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of even with Oasis stuff. You know, there's a lot of early Oasis stuff that hopefully, like, when Peter Jackson's technology eventually gets sold to the world, because at the moment I don't know if it's on general sale. I think you have to literally know people in the know who have it, who own it, yeah, kind of thing. But when it's on sale to the world, there's a lot of early Oasis recordings that are really poor quality and things, or songs that weren't released and all sorts, that they can clean up and use demixing. Because obviously Peter Jackson's end game is the Hamburg. It's the Hamburg. Well, it's an album of it, isn't there, that was released. It's that. But, you know, we could have it with Oasis and plenty of other artists like that. You know, a lot of bootlegs that used to come out, you can clean them up.
Yeah,
you know.
See, I'm a little bit skeptical of the old Hamburg sessions, because obviously we've had the remixed Red and Blue album. Hearing a track, what's the track? She Loves You. I was pretty disappointed with how they had supposedly cleaned it up. You know, so just based on that and how poor quality the Hamburg tapes are, I am a little bit skeptical on how that one's going to come out.
I don't know where the difference is going to lie, because obviously the Hamburg tape is a poor quality recorder. It's one recorder just in the middle of the room, whilst because obviously She Loves You and well, the first three singles really that would be on, like, the Beatles number one, let's say, like Love Me Do, She Loves You, From Me to You, did they use the mono tracks and break it apart, or did they take the original tapes and remix the actual original tapes for them three?
So with Love Me Do, because they used the Ringo on drums version, that was actually taken from a 45 copy. So that is actually a needle drop. Yeah, which wasn't too bad, to be fair.
No, you know, I thought that was all right. Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that one.
With She Loves You, I think they've literally got a master take, and hearing it in general, you can hear different, like, where it's been spliced up, you know, all the effects where the EQ drops in certain parts. And that, unfortunately, I loved the song, but it was a poorly recorded song, you know, so working with what they've got with that was a tough one.
Yeah.
With the Hamburg one, I don't know whether they're going to do another needle drop, whether they've actually managed to get the source tape.
But yeah, or I mean,
where is, you know, it all depends on the source.
I imagine, to be honest, with the Hamburg, it's such poor quality. I imagine just a digital copy that's already out there, because it was put onto CD as well. So a digital copy that's out there will probably do the job, because it'll probably be as good as they could get. I think the quality is so poor, they're going to struggle. I will say, talking of the Red and Blue albums that we had remastered, obviously I'm not too interested in the blue one, because we've already got the remixes of those songs out there pretty much. But with the red one, I was really interested. The stuff that was, anything that's been already previous, because Love Me Do and Love Me Do might have been, but She Loves You and For Me to You, were they ever released in stereo? Ever?
No.
No, so they weren't. Because I've never heard it in stereo originally.
Yeah, From Me to You was actually released on
Me to You might have been.
In stereo.
Yeah. Because
just trying to think. I think there was four recordings. If memory serves me right, I could be wrong, so honestly, grill me in the comment section. Yeah. Love Me Do was mono. P.S. I Love You. She Loves You. And what's the other one? I'll Get You.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a stereo remix of I'll Get You on the Red album.
It wasn't there, was it? Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, like, the rest of the album I really liked. Anything that was already in stereo I was reasonably pleased with. I think Ringo's drums sound so much more powerful in the remixes as well, which is good.
Yeah.
I do find that I feel like the band has sort of moved apart from each other a little bit. I think you don't get the punch of the vocals in the same way all the time. And there are some issues with the earlier recordings, because it is all fast-paced, bang, 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 bang. in your face type music, because it was just that kind of pop music. But I will say, I think the job's okay overall. I've got no real problem with it. But it makes me look forward to, because every album was released in stereo, so it does make me look forward to hearing the earlier albums if they do actually get around to them. I think an actual stopping point would be Rubber Soul if they do want to stop. But
yeah,
by all means, they can keep going all the way through. There's no problem with that for me. I mean, maybe we'll get to, has it been 60 years of Please Please Me? It has, hasn't it? So maybe we'll get to
this year.
Yeah, maybe even the 70th year of that, you might get the Please Please Me remix fully done, because by that point, it would be around there if they release them almost yearly or bi-yearly, or some of them bi-yearly, you know? So, yeah, maybe.
Fingers crossed. I was really impressed with You Can't Do That on the Red Album. Honestly, the drumming and the power behind it was...
Yeah.
I like that song anyway. And to hear it remixed was just like, wow. Yeah. I think that track blew me away on the Red Album.
And that's almost like, I feel like that's justice for that song, because that was one of those songs that's always been on that album and people have always been like, why is this one here? And it's like, well, it's a good song. And obviously, what they're going to pick another album track in its place anyway, because they've got all the big hits. So they're going to pick another weird album track hit on that one. So which other one do you want? Like, and I think this remix makes it shine. Like,
yeah,
and it gives it a second lease of life that it wasn't getting because people were criticizing it. I think we should move on to, because I know this is going to tie into what we're speaking to a bit here, I think, our top five albums of the year each. So I don't know if you do you want to go first and give your or maybe should we go from five up and we give one each. So if you start first and I'll go and then you go. Yeah. So we'll do your number five, because it's the only thing I did ask you to have prepared. So
so I would say number five would probably disreissue, of course, but I'm happy that we finally got the Lighthouse Family Ocean Drive on vinyl.
Oh, has it come out vinyl?
Yes, that come out on National Album Day.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, I'll have to look into that because I love that album. I love it.
Great album.
Yeah.
Fully deserves to be on vinyl. And obviously it was reissued this year. I'm fully happy with it, you know. I've been wanting this one for a long time.
Such an underrated group as well. So underrated.
Yeah. Because I've had, was it Lifted and Ocean Drive on the Now albums, but it's nice to actually have the full album.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I love the Lighthouse Family. I love his breezy sort of floating vocal. I think it's lovely. It's just chilled out. It's good music for a Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. My number five was Shadow Kingdom, the Bob Dylan album that was released.
Okay.
I don't know if you have you listened to it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't even know he released one.
Yeah, and that's part of it as well. And I know why you might not know that, because he basically is kind of an album that isn't. So in 2020, I think it was, it might be 21. Anyway, it's during sort of lockdown-y times. He did a TV special with just him and a band recording live on a soundstage. I haven't seen the special. I would love to, but obviously it was aired in the US. I don't know if it was ever aired in the UK. But he has come round to now releasing it on vinyl. So the point is basically it's recorded live on a soundstage. Effectively, that's a studio album. There's no crowd. And he does stop in between songs. There's no talking in between. And then he goes on to the next one. So it's just like a straight play through studio album. Obviously, they're all famous Bob Dylan's. Well, they're not. Some of them are album tracks, but, you know, he picks a set list you'd expect Bob Dylan to pick. And he does change a lot of the songs away from what he was doing in his live shows, very close to the TV special as well. So he's even changed them even further. Some of the versions on there are fantastic. You know, he's got a great version of Tombstone Blues, I think, on it, where he really slows it down. But yeah, there's a lot of debate as to whether it's a studio album or not. It's why it's not caused much of a fuss. I actually think his reissue of the Budokan concerts, forgive me if I'm saying that place name wrong. I always struggle saying that. I don't know why. But his reissue of that is has probably got a little bit more publicity, because people have wanted to hear the full concerts on vinyl because the original isn't the full concert. So yeah, it's kind of gone under the radar, but it is a fantastic listen. And it's truly, it's Bob Dylan as old Bob Dylan, as you want him to be old Bob Dylan, basically.
I'll have to look that one up. 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
It is good. So yeah. Number four for yourself.
Number four. Now this is going to be an unusual one for me. So it's by an artist called Mitski.
Ooh.
And it's The Land Is Unstoppable, I think it is. I don't know. I could be pronouncing this so wrong. And So Are We, which was introduced to me by a friend. I listened to it and I was like, okay, I really like the sound of this.
I just looked him up on Spotify. I've listened to this as well.
Yes.
Yes, I recognise it now. Yes, yes, carry on.
And I actually went out and just based on listening to the one song, I went out and bought the album on vinyl, you know, straight away.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it, you know, really enjoyed it. And I say I don't listen to much modern music. I do, and I don't, you know, I'm a bit on the fence with some of it, you know. But this this is an album I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's definitely going to take my number four spot.
Yeah, it's I remember it, but not fully, because I only did one quick listen to it, because I found it on the Indigo playlist, I believe. I found one of her songs there. And the Indigo playlist is obviously indie country. So if you like that, check out that playlist on Spotify, because it gives you the best of indie country that's currently out there, like the independent stuff that's not mainstream. She's a bit more folky, though. And obviously part of it's Americana, folk and bluegrass will all go into that. So into independent country. So, but yeah, I'd say, yeah, you've got a world to discover as well from that album.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I've listened to that album, and I listened to her album last year as well, which is really good. Called Laurel Hell, I think.
I think that's, I started listening to that album as well. That's another one that I'm going to pick up. Like, I'll come across it one day, you know. I'm not actively seeking it, but if I'm flicking through a record shop, I see it, I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, so exactly. Like, yeah,
I'm not going to say no to it.
Yeah, fantastic artist, I will say. Funny enough, talking about country music, my next one, my number four, is a country album, and it's actually a UK country album, and it's called Someplace I'd Rather Be, and it's by Vic Allen. So Vic is I think she's from Norwich, but she's London based, and she's a country music singer songwriter, very much a mainstream pop country artist. I've seen her probably about three or four times live over the years. I don't think I've seen her post COVID though. But she's released this album of, it's basically you see a trend in a lot of independent artists in the UK, a load of singles they released plus other songs, and a lot of them were fan favourites she never released, but they're fan favourites from shows. So there's songs on there like Barcelona, which is a fantastic song. And that's been a staple at her shows, but she has never recorded it. She's been going for about 5-6 years now, as in live in London. So yeah, it's just a really good independent country album from the UK, very mainstream though. And yeah, it's easy listen and anticipated, because I've been seeing her live for so many years and she's only just brought out an album. So
I'm going to have to check her out.
Yeah,
she's really good. Link.
Yeah, she's very good. Actually, funny enough, I will say whilst we're here, I've actually just put together a playlist of a load of independent UK-based country musicians. So I'll put a link to that in the podcast description for people to listen to if they want to as well. But yeah, your number three.
My number three would be Hackney Diamonds by the Rolling Stones.
Oh, okay. Is this my number one? So we'll cover my number one now as well. Yes. Why is it in your top five?
We will cover that together. So... Good. If you want to tell me your number three.
Okay, I'll do my number three then. So my number three is Never Ever Stays the Same by Lucy May Walker. So I don't know if you've heard of her. Again, she's a London-based singer-songwriter, definitely folk pop also. I've seen her live a few times as well, probably three or four times again. Seen her headline, seen her supporting, seen her in writers' rounds, all sorts. And she has put out an album similar to Vic Allen's, in the sense there's a load of singles, plus some new tracks, some fan favourites that never been released. And there's a load of really, really, really good songs on this album. Really good. My favourite's a song called Safety Net. She's got this sort of really sort of kooky style, yet it's so grounded and real, and it's so her and so personal, and the way she opens up is a way that not many artists can. Like, she's literally opening up her heart and going, have a look at this. Like, there isn't much else she could do to open further. So yeah, that's my number three. So we'll go to your your next one.
My number two would probably be the Blue Album.
So the reissue.
So yes. The only thing that probably knocked it from the top spot was that awful mix of I Am the Walrus.
Yes, I noticed how awful that was, because that's one of the few we haven't had yet to be remixed, isn't it?
Well, we actually had a version on the Love Album in 2006.
Oh, of course, yes, of course.
Which sounded amazing.
Yeah.
Obviously, we lost the ending a little bit, because obviously the track surged into another one.
Yeah.
But I was hoping for something very similar, just with, obviously, the radio chatter. I know I've heard different element mixes of I Am the Walrus over the years, and I've heard certain bits of the radio in there. But where's King Lear? You know, where's that gone? Where has the orchestra gone?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I found that. I was a bit like, it's so, a lot of the things I liked so much about that song were so quiet in the mix, and they just weren't there. And it's that's the thing, when you trust them to do a remix, they have to judge what people like, what people's ears gravitate to most, and they have to make sure that is still there. And I think they missed it on this one.
Yeah, which is a big shame. But yeah. As for the rest of it, it's good, you know. I think we got a lot of replicated stuff, you know, from the one album that was released in 2015. They reused a load of the mixes on there.
Yeah.
Whereas on the Red Album, they actually remixed them tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I will get to soon, but...
Yeah, and they have... Yeah, that's because the remix technology they've got, although it is now better, they have already used it on these the newer Beatles albums, should I say? But obviously, they are the older of the remixes. It's hard to believe that 2015 is when they started doing them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. God. I think because Abbey Road had a version of this remix technology anyway, which they said was groundbreaking.
Yeah.
I'd actually messed with a version of the mixdown technology, obviously no way near as advanced as what they've got, but it still wasn't there. Obviously, since the Peter Jackson Get Back, they've pretty much nailed it nearly.
Yeah, exactly, and it's only gonna get better as well, which is what I love, because they're gonna keep the more they do it, the better the AI gets, because the more examples it gets of how to do it. And that's the point.
Yeah.
Like, I can only imagine when he comes to those handbook tapes, how many poor quality recordings it's going to listen to. I bet you he's gone out there and bought. He will go out there and find a load of Beatles bootleg vinyl and pop them on and make it hear it, and because he's going to have to get it used to hearing that kind of quality of sound. But I actually would love them to actually use the tech on the Jukebox Jury Show. When they did the live, because it's the only ever live version of Jukebox Jury, and there is a record of that which I've heard, and I own actually. It's one of those weird radio bootlegs that you get, that kind of bootlegs, but not. And I'm never sure what the legality of them is, but I've somehow got a copy of it, and you hear the show, you hear them saying what they think of the records, you hear the songs that are on that they're reviewing. And the crowd are screaming, but you can hear what they're saying, but it would be nice to hear it clearer. And then they play a full show. The actual show doesn't sound bad already. And it's the BBC. So could they have the original masters of it as well? So the potential is so there and ready to go. And it is a really good show, but hey-ho, I don't know if we'll see it.
See, the only issue with the BBC, they did junk a lot of their tapes up until the 80s or so, or something like that. I don't know. I think even went on further than that, you know, with certain shows. I read somewhere that it wasn't actually until the mid-90s that places like this stopped junking tapes.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's what happened with Doctor Who, you know, for years. A lot of it's still lost. And I believe I heard this week that someone at work told me that they've animated some of them where they've still got the audio, so you can still kind of watch them. And obviously they found some in a church at one point and things, all sorts, all different places. But yeah, I mean, hopefully the Beatles stuff is still there. I mean, you know, they do seem to have a lot of archival footage of the Beatles, weirdly. And I don't know why. And so, but hey, we'll find out. My number two record then is... it's by an artist called Hardy, all capitalized usually. And it's called The Mockingbird and the Crow.
And it's a really interesting record because you've got two halves, The Mockingbird and The Crow, and it's a double album. So Hardy is a country singer from the US who kind of is mainstream, but he's in this world of, he's in this sort of world where people like Ernest, Morgan Wallen, and these are the bigger artists there. They're kind of trying to do traditional, but also bringing the hip hop beats and things. And you'll get an album where you get a mixture of a bit of traditional, bit of hip hoppy beats, bit of pop, and you kind of get it all mixed, but individual tracks will sound a bit different. Well, what he's done is he decided to do a full on country album, as in mainstream, not really using any trap beats or anything like that, just as mainstream and normal as modern day country music gets. And then that's the first half, that's The Mockingbird. Then The Crow is a rock album. So I went into this knowing this, and I listened through to the country album, and it was like, actually, this is a really good standalone country record. This beats a lot of what's on the country radio at the moment. But then the middle song is the title track, The Mockingbird and The Crow. Halfway through the middle song, it transitions into a rock track from country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and there's a lot of screaming. It is some heavy screaming rock, and I am all for it. And he breaks the fourth wall, as in he literally satirizes himself on it as well for some of the songwriting he did in the past that he's now looking back at and maybe going, oh, that was a bit cheesy, bit too mainstream, things like this. Yeah, really good album. And it really shows his character really well. I think he comes across really well in the record as an artist and person. So yeah, one to check out if you just want something interesting and different. That's there.
I'll definitely give that one a listen to. Actually, 100%. All of yours, actually, I'm going to give a listen to. So definitely give me a couple of links when we're done.
Yeah, I'll definitely will. Yeah. So number one now for yourself is the Red album, I'm going to assume.
Yes, yeah. So I will give an honourable mention to 1989 Taylor's version.
Oh, interesting.
Because, yeah, I was going to throw this one in there, but it didn't quite make it. You know, I've recently been started, like, I've started to listen to a little bit of Taylor Swift. It was more, I listened to one of your podcasts. It was Perfectly Pop.
Yes.
Even when he was talking to Perfectly Pop, and I was listening to some of his what he had in his collection, you know, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna sort of start diving into more, you know, more Taylor Swift and stuff. I think you briefly discussed 1989,
yeah,
and it was sort of based on that, really. I'd listened to albums like Folklore, I think it was called, and I actually liked that album, surprisingly.
Yeah,
but
Folklore and Evermore are my favourite two of hers because they're so different. I think her voice really suits folk.
Yeah, so. And I actually, you know, I liked it. 1989, honourable mention, but just missed out on my top five. It is going to be the Red Album as my number one spot, mainly because we've got brand new mixes of the early material, you know. And I've been itching for things like this. Again, a couple of things they did poorly, but overall, it'd be everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, totally agree. We've already, you know, we discussed it earlier. I was just happy to hear the new mixes of the early tracks because I was really interested to hear what they would sound like. As growing up as a Beatles fan, I liked the early stuff more. And then as I became a late teenager, like a 15, 16 year old, that's when I discovered the later stuff. Well, I already knew it and I liked it, but I really got into it properly and understood why this stuff is so good. So I was like, but I was just interested to hear it. I will give a couple of honorable mentions, actually. You know, I mean, I could be as complimentary to say your own album, you know,
Phase
2 remix would be in there. You know, that is in it's within my top 10, you know, so it's, you know, that's definitely there. And we've obviously done a podcast all about it, so I won't go into too much, but it's, you know what, as somebody who I do listen to hip hop and you know, R&B and things like that, but I don't listen too much, you know. I love people like MF Doom, Tribe. I love Tribe Called Quest, all these people. But your album was a brilliant gateway into newer hip hop, and you know, it's also got the retro vibe on it as well, I think, which I think we talked about on the podcast with us. So it does kind of work with what I like as well. So yeah, that would definitely be there.
Thank you.
A couple that I want to also go into. I think I'll go into three, and I'll be as quick as I can about them. Yeah. because I think they're all worth mentioning. Southern Galactic by Caleb Lee Hutchinson. He's an independent country singer again. This album, like I put five songs into my Discoverist playlist, and I usually put one or two from an album. I put five because it was that good. he puts a load of disco on it. It's very traditional style country stuff, but he puts disco into it, and he does it all sorts. It's a really mismatched album that just works. So that's in there. I thought the Zombies' new album this year, Different Game, was really good. I don't think there's a really bad Zombies album out there, and they've been going for years.
Yeah. Again, I didn't even know this.
Yeah, yeah. They
Where keep... have I been?
Well, this is the thing I didn't know, other than the first two albums, basically up towards Odyssey and Oracle, I didn't know that they kept releasing music, and I just went through it all this year when I found out the new album came out. And yeah. I liked it so much that I happened to be in St. Albans one day, which is where they're from. And there's a record shop there called Empire Records, which is fantastic. And you'll see me outside there sometimes, or with reels and things on my Instagram, me going there. They had a signed copy by all the current band members, which is two originals, I believe. And the rest are obviously just been there, some of them for a few years and things. So I bought it. It was on blue vinyl and I bought it because I thought I have to have that because, you know, I imagine they did a signing or something nearby, but I had to get it. Another album I want to quickly just mention would be Seven Palms by Paul Simon. It's a beautiful album. I didn't really listen to the words. I don't know what it's about. I think there is a religious context to it. But I just listened to the music and the way he sings with this acoustic guitar. It's just him and the acoustic guitar singing, and it's kind of a non-stop album. It doesn't really stop at any point. It does, but you don't feel like it. The song's quite long. But it just works, and he's losing his hearing, so we don't know how much we're going to get out of Paul Simon. So it's just worth making sure you enjoy everything that's there, really. I will say, just to add, King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard, The Silver Cord, and their other album, which is that really long title, both big departures for the band, really enjoyed both of them. Other than that, there's a few other smaller artists that kind of made it around here and around my top 10, 20, but I won't go into them. I'll probably post about it some other point on my Instagram. But number one for me, Hackney Diamonds, which I know was your number three by the Rolling Stones. So what's your thoughts on the record?
I was, honestly, when I listened to it, I was just blown away. I was like, this is it. Classic Stones, you know, the Stones at their best, 100%.
Yes, definitely.
We've not had an album like that in a long time.
No. You know. The last time, and I actually run a TikTok about this, about how it'd be a great entry level, a bigger bang was that. But that was 2005, so it's a long time ago. That was these Stones doing the stereotypicals. It's almost like them doing a stereotype of themselves. At least with the new record, there is a lot more variety on it as well. So it does sound like an evolution of the Stone sound to what it should be now, which I liked. I appreciated the fact that there was a song with not only with Charlie Watts, but also with, as much as I have my thoughts on the man and I'm not very happy with him, Bill Wyman was on it as well. But I do appreciate the fact there is a song with pretty much as close as you can get to an original Stones lineup in 2023. I do appreciate that that's there. What do you think about the collaborations on it, actually? Because they were pretty awful decent, right?
Yeah. I was like, Lady Gaga. You know, that's just unusual. But it's a good track. You know, I enjoyed it. Again, collaboration with Paul McCartney. Angry. Whoa, what a track.
Yeah, I know. And that lead single, too.
Yeah, it's... Again, no words. I was just like, when I heard it, I was like, just blew me away, honestly. I was like, wow, what an album.
And the
fact it even got to number one as well.
Yeah, as well.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it shows that people still want to hear the Stones and they want to hear them as they expect the Stones to be, right? Because that is literally what you get. I will say, I thought the Lady Gaga was... I thought that was the best collaboration on the album. I think she absolutely kills it. In a world where there's Paul McCartney on a record as well, that's me saying a lot. But Paul McCartney, the fuzz bass he used on that track. Oh my word, it was so good, wasn't it?
Good. And Joe, me, myself, PJ from our podcast, and another one of our friends, Gal, actually went and saw the Stones, when was it? Last year in Hyde Park?
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, for an 8-year-old man, he can move.
I know. Mick Jagger's incredible, isn't he?
Moves and everything still.
Yeah, he's
the performance was amazing.
Well, he still has to undergo his fitness regime as well. Like, he still undergoes all of that. I mean, he's incredible with what he does. Like, really incredible. I can't believe how good he moves around stage and what he does. I mean, he's just incredible. I only say great words about him. And also, actually, I listened to an interview with him. It's about 30-odd minutes long or so, about the new album. Such a smart and intelligent man, isn't he?
Yeah.
So intelligent. Yeah. Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, obviously, because I've always liked the Stones, but I've never proper dived into them, you know. Like, I've always loved the Satanic Majesty's Request.
Yeah.
That's always been one of my favourite albums. Yeah. I know that's hit and miss for fans, you know. People always say you either like that album and don't like the rest, or you like them, but you don't like that album.
Yeah.
You know, with me, I was probably in that category where I loved that album. The rest was okay. Gimme Shelter, absolutely loved that track. But seeing them live sort of reignited the love for them, you know, that I actually had. So,
yeah,
I listened to loads of Stones. And the fact that we had another album come out this year, I was just like, I've got to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. Did you buy it on vinyl at all?
I did indeed. I've got it here. I've yet to post it, which well, I kind of want to do it before the end of the year.
Which version did you get? There were loads.
The HMV version.
HMV. What's different about that one then? Because I'm not familiar with that one as much.
It's on some sort of coloured vinyl.
Some sort of
I'm colourblind, so it's no good. It's no good asking me.
I'll let you know the version I got, because I wasn't going to buy it on vinyl until it went quite cheap, because I can look at that and see it's the kind of album that eventually will hit sort of the £15 to £20 range on Amazon on sale at some point. So I was like, I'll wait for that. But then they put out a copy, because obviously Spotify sponsored Barcelona Football Club. When there's a big release, they put the artist's logo on the shirt instead of the Spotify logo. They did it with the Stones' lips. So they did it with a baseball team in the US as well as Barcelona, but they did produce a version of the record where it's basically a picture disc with loads of the Stones' lips in the background, but in the foreground is the Barcelona Football Club logo. And being someone who collects football records and things like that, I bought that. It did cost me £40, and I will say that for me, people who know me, though, that's an expensive record for me. But yeah, that's the one I bought. So we've got two good pressings there, two good variants, two different ones. But they went mental on the marketing for it, didn't they? They just went mad and just went heavy. Yeah. It was hugely marketed. Talking of records, I wanted to do something. I haven't prepared you for this, but what's your best vinyl? What are some of the best vinyl pickups you got this year as well? Because obviously, majority of my listeners collect records in some way, or are into at least knowing this kind of stuff. So, what's some of your best pickups of the year?
Best pickup of the year. Well, I'm gonna actually go with this one. So, recently on my vinyl page, for those who don't know, I'm also Vinyl Lad 93.
Yeah.
I've actually acquired a big collection of now that's what I call music from number 20 to 35 in mint condition.
Yeah,
so I had the collection before, but they've been played to death, you know, them albums that you just chuck on, everyone listens to at a party, you know, people ruin it. But I actually picked up a mint collection from 20 to 35 for a very, very good price. I'll put it this way, for the same price, I shouldn't really be saying this loud, but for the same price I sold my copy of 30 to 35 is what I paid for 20 to 35 mint.
Wow, okay, that's good. Yeah, that's really good. For me, I mean, to be fair, actually, we'll say about the Now albums. As you said earlier, you've had the Lighthouse family on there for years. There's sometimes they're the only way to get certain tracks and certain artists on vinyl, aren't they, as well? Which is important. Yeah. And I think that's why it's important that they live. And do you know if they sell those records well in the UK, or if it's just in the US, or is it just the UK that likes Now albums? I don't know. Because they are a British thing, but...
Yeah, the thing, the US have their own version.
Oh, okay.
Because I've actually, I'll tell you what I've got. I've got a right obscure one. It's Now 74 on vinyl.
Mm. Okay.
Which was, yeah, it was a one-off release from the US. Mm. And it contained stuff like Lizzo, what was it? The Weeknd.
Yeah.
And all that. Whereas us over in the UK, I think we were on Now 116 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time of recording. But so, I mean, yeah, I've got
that's
like 1
crazy
to 30.
That we're on 100 odd.
Yeah. Like, I've got 1 to 35. Then all of a sudden, I've got 74.
Yeah.
It's like, where did that come from?
I'll give a few of mine as well whilst I'm here, because I've got my Discogs up to, you know, to prompt me of some as well. So big things I did this year was I completed my Springsteen collection, so I've got every Springsteen album. Completed my Elvis collection, that's every studio, soundtrack and live album. Plus, I also completed these soundtrack EPs as well, to a level I wanted to. To a level I wanted to. There is one, two I haven't got, which is the Tickle Me ones, and I refuse to buy them because there's two of them, and I refuse to buy them because the tracks are already on every other album. I've already got the tracks, so I refuse that. So I did that, and I also completed Bob Dylan as well. Now, bit of a mishap with Bob Dylan. Christmas album, Christmas in the Heart. That's a rare vinyl. We're talking studio when we talk Springsteen and Dylan, by the way, but yeah, Christmas in the Heart, rare vinyl. It only ever came out originally in 2009 or around then, and I bought a copy for, I saved up weeks and weeks, months even, to buy it, putting away a tenner every now and again when I could, and I paid a three digit sum for it, put it that way. 3 weeks later it gets reissued for 20 quid. Gutted. Just... and then they bring out a 30 quid white version. I was like, no, this is even worse. It's like we're having salt in a wound at that point. People are like, oh, why don't you sell it? And I'm like, the hassle of selling is too much for me to bear with. But yeah, other than that, picture discs of The Mandalorian season 1 and 2. That's a big pickup for me. Flaming Pie, the box set with the demos in it. I picked that up. Ooh. A lot of these I got because my old work I used to work at used to give me vouchers. We had a leaderboard for your productivity, and if you finished in top three, there's all different leaderboards you were in, so if you finished top three of any of them, you get a voucher on Amazon. So I had similar with John Mayer's Continuing on picked up. I got First Team Floor Elevators, an album by them. I will say one that helped me discover a band even more. I knew they were good, but Hell on Church Street by the Punch Brothers, I picked that up. That was a great one. Obviously, the Stones picture disc. There's been quite a few this year. I picked up a couple by the Midnight, the synthwave band at a gig. A big surprise of the year was I picked up a Little Steven album, which is Springsteen's guitarist, Born Again Savage. I picked it up for about 12 quid on Amazon, and it came, and it was green, and it was two albums. It was a green swirl and a yellow swirl. Which was not expected and not advertised on the listing, so I was very happy with that when that came. Other than that, it's you know, I picked up the first two Oasis albums, which have been on my list for a long time, but never got round to it. So yeah, because of the money that I was given by my old work, I was able to get some really good special records this year. So that's made me really happy, to be honest. I've actually, yeah, just had a great year for record collecting, to be honest. And actually for half the year, because I met my new, you know, I met Charlotte, my new girlfriend. I say new, I've been with her for half a year now, so it's you know, established now. But I haven't been buying so much, but even then I've just had a year with, even then I've had some great finds since I've been with her, you know. Paul Weller's Fat Pop Volume 1, I got that pitch disc for 12 quid in the sale, you know. So yeah, oh, nice. I've done all right, so I've been quite happy there. So to start rounding up, I think we should talk about another event of the year of some kind. So effectively we've had some sad news this year, you know, people like David Crosby, Jeff Beck, Shane McGowan, more recently Tina Turner, Gordon Lightfoot, Sinead O'Connor, Burt Bacharach, etc. They have all sadly passed away. Obviously we can reflect on some of them. I'd like to reflect on Jeff Beck. Especially because it was so sad with him, because he was so healthy when he passed as well. He just had a problem just hit him, and that was it, basically. But what a player. What a player. Are you, have you listened to much Jeff Beck this year because of it, or have you ever really listened to him?
Not this year. I have in the past, of course, but yeah, that was a shocker, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, that was a shocker.
I mean, some of his last recordings would have been on Patient Number 9, the Ozzy Osbourne album. And obviously he's an artist who is quite ill at the moment as well. So it is quite scary because they're all getting to that age. Yeah. But some of those last recordings, I mean, have you listened to that album at all?
Not yet, no.
I'd say listen to the songs, minimum, the songs of Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton, because, I mean, all the collaborations are good. Zach Wilde's incredible on it, but he's always great with Ozzy. But, yeah, the Eric Clapton solos and the Jeff Beck solos are something to behold in that record. They really did just go all out to the point when Ozzy was basically telling them, like, you know when you were in Cream, Eric? Can you put your wah pedal on? I don't want you here if you don't have your wah. That's basically what he's saying to him. Like, so Ozzy was really pushing to get those classic sounds. So yeah, it's definitely worth it. Is there been anyone this year that you've been really sad that's passed away, but you've obviously reveled listening to the music and everything?
Tina Turner, I think, you know. I was talking about just her and her music to one of my work colleagues, and I think it was like literally the next day or the day after, saying it was like she had passed away. I was like, bloody hell, you know, this is crazy. Mm. Yeah, that is a sad one. Because again, she has had a hard life with not going into it. Ike, wasn't it? Obviously, I don't want to be misquoted or so.
No,
but
no,
yeah, I was just like, bloody hell, you know, I can't believe that one.
Yeah, people can Google her life. But I mean, at least we know that towards the end of her career, she, as in we're talking the 80s onwards, you know, she went on a real up period and did, you know, she did actually have such a successful career from then on as well. I mean, more successful than the early period, I'd say, you know, when she was with Ike, to be honest. That's what people remember of Tina Turner, really, if you're looking at generations going forward, right?
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
So, for those who like country music, she does a very, I'm going to call it good, because you can't believe it exists. And once you get over the fact it's Tina Turner singing country music, it's actually, you go, this is actually quite decent, you know, because it's really hard to hear her voice a bit. But then after a while, you go, actually, she's singing it really well. Like, so she does an album of country covers. It's quite good. I will say that. Right, to finish off then, one last review type thing, and then obviously we'll go through what's coming up in the future for yourself. Best concert or gig of the year for you?
Do you know what? Trying to think about this, I can't think of any that I've been to this year, which is really sad because I am an avid gig goer and stuff. But this year's just been, I can't explain it. It's been unexplainable, you know? Have I seen anyone this year? I don't think so. It pains me to say. I wanted to see Madness and the Lightning Seeds, but I think work stopped me from going. You know, I've gone to go to things and work's happened.
You get pulled in, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So. No, I my last job, I used to have to, because I couldn't guarantee when I finished, so I used to have to take half days and things for gigs as well. There's only so many you can do, but I've got a newer job now, which has allowed me to go, what makes it easier for the future. I will say I've had quite a big gigging year, to be honest. As in, like, instead of going to as many as I used to, I've gone to more, sort of only slightly more expensive gigs, but more, you know, less of them, but more expensive, if that makes sense. So I saw my top gig of the year is probably Willie Nile, which, to be honest, I used to pay like tenner to see him, and he's my second favorite artist. He's not very well known, sort of came around the 80s and then had some problems with record companies and all sorts. He had loads of issues, came back in the 90s and then came back again in the 2000s, and it's in the 2000s when he developed a fan base. And to see him in the 100 Club pack it out, probably could have packed out a venue double the size, and everyone in there singing every word to his songs. Incredible.
Yeah.
And he's one of my sort of teenage sort of artists that I just fell in love with, right? He was incredible. He's incredible. So other than that, though, I mean, a gig I went to last night was fantastic. I saw Twinny, the UK country singer. She used to be in Hollyoaks. She was an actress. I saw her. And she had First Time Flyers supporting her, which is a UK country supergroup. And then also Harley Moon Kemp was supporting as well, and she that's actually Martin Kemp's daughter, and Shirley from Shirley, his wife of her mum. She was actually at the gig, as in that's from Pepsi and Shirley, the Wham singers. She was actually there. It was quite good. Other than that, the Midnight were good this year. When I saw them live, I really enjoyed that. And yeah, I saw Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top as well. Oh, wow. So yeah, that was my treat of the year. So that was a big expensive one. And I saw him at the Shepherd's Bush Empire, so smaller venue too.
Yeah, I saw, who was it? Lightning Seeds at, Shepherd's Bush Empire last year. And I would say a highlight for me, let's say, last year, apart from the Stones, was probably the Divine Comedy. So the Divine Comedy was celebrating 30 years. Yeah. They had concerts scheduled for 2020.
That scares me. 30 years.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And they literally done, it's like a recital, basically, going through every album that they've ever done. Yeah. They've done two albums a night over the course of 5 nights. Now, yeah. I booked my tickets in 2020. That got postponed to 2022. And honestly,
that's a long postponement, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, because of lockdown restrictions, all that stuff. But that was definitely a highlight, seeing them albums live. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is the thing as well. I had a postponement. Well, I think one of my last postponements was 2022, and that was Danny Nichols, the UK-based Americana singer. I say UK-based, actually. I think she's lived out in Nashville for a bit as well. So, but she's from the UK. I saw her again live this year at the Green Note, and this saddens me because she deserves it so much to have following, because when she was really hitting momentum is when COVID hit. So we saw her at a concert recording or show recording at the Water Rats. She packed it. And then since then, the venues haven't been as packed. Now, that could be because, you know, the momentum just stopped or poor promotion, but really she deserves that more. So I want to say, I'd actually love for her to come on the podcast or something at some point as well, because I really would love to hear her story behind her music, because it fascinates me how well she writes. It just fascinates me. But yeah, no, she'll be... she's incredible. So that's another one I saw. But thank you so much for coming on, Ryan/Fumes, today. Really enjoyed it, because and we have gone on for a bit longer than I usually do, so, but that's for good reason. What's coming up for yourself music wise and things you want to promote through?
So I'm actually working on a track now. This one was composed by Charlie Jane, who's obviously part of our group. Don't know if this, I'm not too sure if this is going to be a solo single for her. I think it might be, but I'm currently working on that as we speak. I was doing it before the pod. What else? We've got quite a lot in the pipeline. You know, there is a lot of ideas floating about, but it's just trying to build on them. You know, we've got tracks, we've got the song sort of written. It's just like, oh yeah, we'll look at it later. But later just never seems to come, you know. I think we're going to wait for the vinyl of phase two to come out, which should be out by February at the latest. Once that's out, then we're going to start sort of focusing on newer things. But that's it for me, really.
I mean, let me know when it's all out, the new track and everything. You know, even if it is a you know, if it's one of Charlie's solo tracks, I will obviously run a reel and things and promote it. So let me know, and I'll get the ball moving on that one, promoting it to my followers and everything. It sounds like you've got an exciting 2024 ahead.
Yes, definitely.
All I can say is thank you for your time and thank you for coming on. And we'll obviously wrap up a bit after this. But thank you so much. No problem at all. Cheers. Thank you.
Take care.